Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know. From masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 769.
You got it.
I did it.
You did it.
Yes.
Sorry, small victories we have to celebrate.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Or not so much.
Yeah. There was dynamite, I guess, technically. Yeah. There was explosions. Anyway, let's go around the table.
A lot of people were blown apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly the men that slept with Josephine. So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Paul.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Joe is out this week doing family stuff. Anyway, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. It's super helpful. To the League of Show Sharers, we love you, but I didn't get a chance to do it this week because we're recording a day early. And yesterday I did all the family things. We went every year we hunt and kill our own Christmas tree.
Yes.
So we went and did that. And and then we went and looked at Christmas lights.
Do you turn to the camera and go, be very, very quiet?
At what point in the process do you acquire twine?
They hand it to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have it ready for you. And then I always have my brother-in-law tie the tree to the roof of the car because I have no skill set for that.
Yeah.
So, I thought you went to the spinning wheel and is that how they make it? I don't know.
But we went to the zoo and looked at the Christmas lights.
Nice.
And I like all the non-Jesus-y aspects of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That's my... We're a secular Christmas household.
Oh, so not keeping the Christ in Christmas?
Nah.
Just miss? Just celebrating miss?
Yeah, celebrating miss.
Yeah. So anyway, so we will get you next week. Kevin will, because I won't be here next week, because I will be in London.
Yeah, we'll have to figure it out. I mean, even if you record something, I mean, we're getting the screeners now, so maybe even if we record like on Tuesday or Wednesday or
potentially,
something.
Depending on what our schedule looks like. Yeah, so you can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra. Also, don't forget, you can watch these episodes on YouTube. At youtube.com/@#TheClipOut.
Real Spoilers.
Realspoilers.org.
Hey, especially if you like Elvis, I would highly recommend you visit the YouTube channel.
The Elvis fans have taken over the comments of our Priscilla episode.
Number three in the time that we've been on YouTube now for over a year consistently. In 2 weeks, it's our number three most viewed video.
These people are mad because we said bad things about Elvis.
They slandered Elvis. Yeah. They did. I didn't. I wasn't on that episode. Yeah. Don't come after me, Internet. But please keep watching and commenting on our YouTube videos.
Sure. It's funny. I've never been embroiled in a controversy that I was so disengaged with. I was just like, well, I mean, Elvis is kind of a dirtbag. So, like...
we're not having a fight. You're having a fight.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, like you can still like them, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it was a different time and sure. And, but,
I had no idea that I knew Elvis was popular, obviously, but I had no idea that his supporters were like
still out there.
If you say any, or on the internet, like it's not like, no offense, but I don't think of the Elvis demographic as one that's like in the YouTube.
Why? Because he died 46 years ago?
I will never forgive Elvis for his death robbing Groucho Marx of his...
Oh, wow. Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Elvis died like, what, the day after Groucho Marx?
Oh. Or less than 12 hours.
Yeah, and so it was like... Groucho Marx got almost no attention when he died because everyone was talking about Elvis. Yeah. And so...
Had a much greater influence on me than Elvis.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, hold on. His death?
Right. No, I think Groucho Marx is actually dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident.
No, the other one.
The other one. Yeah. So,
how old would he be now? But he'd be like 90 now or something, right? Like, or how old would he?
Probably around, right? I don't know.
Because I guess like in the...
Groucho would be 150.
Well, if you take care of yourself.
So he was born in 35. So, I'm bad at math.
That's 90, or 88, or whatever, 89.
So he could very easily still be around.
He could, but I just mean at some point, the he's still alive thing is going to be less likely. Even if he were.
Mathematically.
I hear he's living with Andy Kaufman and JFK Jr.
Yes.
And that was just for the QAnon listeners.
Just for the QAnon listeners.
Well, I guess we got to get those hits up. So.
Yeah, whatever works, man. Whatever works. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig into Napoleon.
Now, are there Napoleon super fans?
Probably.
Yeah, but it's the pastry.
Oh, the ice cream.
No, that's Neapolitan.
I know.
That's the worst ice cream. Who wants pink ice cream? What is that about?
It's Pepto-Bismol.
No child has ever said, can we have strawberry ice cream?
Yeah. It's like if you ever had a thing in Neapolitan, it's like everybody eats everything but the pink ice cream.
Is that still a thing? Can you still buy Neapolitan?
Yeah, I think at Walmart for like $4, you get the tub. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I got to say, not a fan of fake chocolate ice cream, though. Like, I would rather have the pink probably than the fake chocolate flavored. Like,
what is fake chocolate?
Well, you know what I mean? If it's like in the tub from Walmart, you know, and everything's artificial and it's like the chocolate is just like not good.
I'll take fake chocolate over real pink.
strawberry ice cream with real strawberries is good.
No, I don't like fruits or vegetables. Really?
Oh, well, that's true. You're allergic to those.
Yeah.
But vanilla, I think vanilla bean is my favorite, where it's like that real vanilla taste.
Okay. We really are chomping at the bit to talk about Napoleon, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well,
so
I enjoyed this movie.
So here's my question. Why does Ridley Scott hate horses?
This was I'm really glad you mentioned this, Tom. This is the first time I've ever seen a horse take a cannonball to the face.
Yeah. Twice.
And why did we need to see it?
There's like graphic horse mutilation twice.
Yes.
The only thing I can think of is that was a huge part of the war that, you know, the cavalry.
No, I will say, all the time I've seen movies where like they're fighting
on horses.
Like at most, like a horse falls down.
They fall over or whatever.
But you don't actually see like horse carnage.
Right.
So I think I know that you've got one side that's probably like, oh, well, that seems so cruel or mean. But like on the other hand, it's like, look at all the animals they killed because they use them as these tools of war. And I think it kind of spotlights like the abuse and everything the animals went through. So
I don't think that's why he did it. I don't think he was trying to spotlight anything except we can make the horse's head explode.
Right.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. It was interesting because, yes, you don't usually see that. And then I was also trying to think from a different point of view. We don't remember, like, we don't think of how animals were used and abused like that. And now with wars, we generally don't have animals.
I mean, when they
involved.
First started making westerns, they would just kill the horses on film. Some of those old westerns where you see horses falling, they didn't have some special trick that like they were just like, yeah, that horse fell and died, whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy to think of. I mean, things are so different now. And so I don't know. To me, it was kind of like the cruelty of the way that we used, you know, human beings would use animals as objects, you know, like just like they were a car or a train or whatever else it could be that was expendable. And it kind of spotlights the abuse that those animals went through.
The horse expendables.
The horse expendables.
Now that's a movie I'm in for. So
I'm putting together a team.
So you like this?
I like this movie. Yeah. I didn't know a lot about Napoleon. What I thought was really fascinating is that in my experience, Napoleon's always a joke. I didn't know that he was one of the world's greatest military leaders.
Yeah.
But he's...
Did the Princess Bride teach you nothing?
But in all the media that I've seen, it's always a joke. He's short or... what?
And he wasn't.
Right? He's 5'7", which was average for men at the time.
Which was average
for
the time, yeah.
But so that's what I mean is that it's like a slander or propaganda. It's like they made up... And I was doing some history and like with Marie Antoinette, and apparently a lot of her detractors were making things up, and a lot of like let them eat cake apparently was not something she said, but it was... you know, political. It was like, well, yeah, we need to take the power out. So she said this horrible thing and did this horrible thing. And so knowing...
That would never happen today.
Oh, never, right? Exactly. So it's interesting to see how good Napoleon was and how...
To a point.
Yeah, well, that's debatable too with all the deaths and everything. But, you know, going and doing research on Napoleon, it's like he is hailed as one of the greatest tacticians, which his stuff is still studied today. And I always thought the guy was just a... angry, short little dude that craved power and was a joke. And so I don't know. It was really interesting to see and then research and be like, yeah, people really do respect him as a general. And the Napoleonic Code, like, obviously it was a little archaic compared to nowadays, but, you know, it instilled education and the metric system, which, of course, we aren't on board for. But it the stuff that he did is still in use today. And I don't know. It just seemed like Europe was really prosperous during his time in control, not saying everything he did was great, but like the guy was responsible for a lot of really positive things.
Yeah, but the whole folly of war thing, that's what, you know, at the end of this movie, there's a graphic that mm-hmm. tells you that he led 61 battles, and mm-hmm. we get to see six in the movie.
Yeah.
And 6 million people died on the battlefields mm-hmm. in these wars that Napoleon led or was part of.
Was it 6 million? I thought it was 3 million.
Okay, it was 3 million
still
people.
Still a lot.
Yeah.
I was
including horses.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I thought it was 4 million for some reason.
Millions.
Right,
millions.
I know, I know.
Millions
I know,
of people died
right.
just so egotists
yeah.
could have more land. That's all they were fighting over. They were yeah. fighting over land. I want to take over this part of that country. Let's take over part of France. No, let's take over part of... whatever.
But that's war in general. I mean, it's so... The power trip of
what is
war.
It good for?
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
And so that was the thing that stuck with me
yeah.
during the movie, and particularly when I saw that graphic, which apparently I don't remember actually. But you're seeing a guy who is a genius at war. And at the end, was France bigger because of Napoleon? Did they get a lot of land from other countries? Did they? They didn't expand and take over Europe,
but,
right?
Yeah, but if he didn't do the things that he did, England was going to take over all these places. They were trying to. I mean, it was just a fight between. Well, England's coming in, and when he goes to Egypt, England was trying to go and take that over, and then be able to take over more parts of the world. So, I mean, he was stopping the invading England from taking over the parts where France was. So I'm not saying everything. Again, I'm just learning about the guy. I don't know a ton. I thought he was just a joke, but it seems that what he was doing was trying to have a more peaceful Europe, is so what he says, but then all these other leaders were coming and trying to take over land. So he was like, no, join us and be partners. And they're like, no, we want your land. And he's like, well, we go to war. And he was really good at it. So I don't think it was just him trying to conquer, but he did take influence from the Roman Empire, and he did. There were a lot of things that, like, I think he eventually had an epiphany where he was like, I was sent to be the emperor, the great, whatever. You know what I mean? So he definitely did have some of that ego trip stuff about him, but I don't think that he was just a conqueror. I think that the world was, at this point in time, everyone was trying to get everyone else's land, and he was like, be partner, at least in the movie, you know, like join up with us. And then Alexander or whatever is like, nope, I'm good. And Prussia or whatever, they're all like, nope, I'm good. And then he says, okay, well, he made a mistake because we're going to take you over then.
We're going to sacrifice millions of men to get that hill. Oh, wait, that's Vietnam. Sorry.
He was basically Italian. I didn't know that either. That Corsica was just basically taken over by the French. Mm-hmm. But it was Italian up until then, so that's where he comes from. So he was Italian, but, you know, French because of the territories or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to see all the things he accomplished and all the wars that he won and everything. because again, I grew up in, you know, cartoons or whatever, and they show him and he looks funny. He's short. He's Bill a Rocky and Bullwinkle or whatever. Yeah, it's
Bill
just
and Ted.
He's a joke, right? And so I think it's interesting how popular media can paint a historical figure and everyone just piles on. Oh, he's a joke. He's a joke. But it's like, this guy was really good.
You like Joaquin Phoenix?
I think Joaquin Phoenix is one of the greatest actors out there. I did not like him, but I don't necessarily think like, oh, he was perfect for this role. You know, it took me a while to get used to the no accent and everything.
I was glad they didn't do accents. I didn't need a whole movie of Joaquin Phoenix being like, oh, let's take this hill.
Wait, did we? That's offensive. We researched this at one point. Is that offensive or not?
Oh, they're French. I don't care. Yeah. I'm trying to get the YouTube comments going.
But you love their fries.
Going. I'm trying to get the YouTube comments going.
They're fries. Yeah. Thank you.
I really like the fact that they're like, we're not even going to try. Like, we're just like, no.
I like it when movies do that thing where they start in the language and then they turn into English.
Hunt for Red October.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, we get it. We're understanding them. You don't, and right. I'm not opposed to subtitles, but I like it when they kind of transition you. This movie's a little bit abrupt. They just, you plop you down here in France and then everyone has English accents and Joaquin Phoenix has an American accent and it just goes, which again, I'm not saying I wanted him to do it because
right.
basically what I figured out is he's like, we want Joaquin Phoenix. And Joaquin Phoenix is like, I can't do a French accent. He's like, okay.
But I can mumble.
Well,
that was my problem with him. I thought he mumbled his way through the entire movie.
I thought some of his speeches were like really like he just learned them the day before or something. I think he's a great actor, but something about this performance, like he didn't seem honed into me. And that's a shame because I think he's so good.
I didn't really understand what Ridley Scott thinks of Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Short of that graphic at the end. Like, I'm just like, do you like this guy? Do you hate this guy? Like, I really...
I think he's got to like him. I really do. Because, well, whether you like him or don't like him, again, all those things I was talking about, it's really fascinating to see. Like, the Napoleonic Code is still used today.
But
now, it's
none of that's in
such.
The movie.
You
see nothing about... Like, he just shows up one day and he's like, hey, remember that time I won a battle? I think I'm going to be in charge of the country now. And everybody's like, okay. And then the people that are in charge of the country, they just show up at their house and they're like, you're not in charge anymore. And they're like, well, darn it, the heck. And then that's the end of it. Like, it's just so like, it's
yeah,
just
the
so
political
weird.
Stuff is like, they don't really go into it. I do think it's more about the military, right? His focus is on the battles.
Well, and the relationship with Josephine. Right.
Which is also interesting because from doing my research, like he wrote her letters nonstop when he was over in Egypt. He would write her at least once a day. And she was...
That's how you had to sext back then.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, she was leaving him on read because she was not writing him back. And he was very frustrated. She had taken a lover at home and he's writing her every day. And these letters he writes, I mean, he was like... I found out he actually wrote a romance novel like later on in his life. Like this dude was... You know, you hear about French Passion and all that. Like, dude, his letters were like...
Italian Passion.
Well, yeah, but you know... Technically, it was French. But.
I don't even have time for that. I mean, here's a guy. Yeah. He's leading a legion of men in war against any number of opponents at any time.
It's probably when he started losing.
Hey.
And he's writing in longhand.
I believe what he said was, you get your smoke breaks, I get my letter breaks, okay? It's only fair. Every 15 minutes, every couple hours, I get to write a letter for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And when I see a film like this, I think, oh, they're trying to play up the romance. They're making it into, they're giving like, you know, here's something for people that want to watch a love story or whatever. But it's like, this dude was extremely passionate with his romances and his feelings for Josephine. And he never loved anyone as much as her. And the things you see in the movie where he's like, you know, he doesn't want to divorce her, but he needs an heir to carry on his legacy and all that and still loved her and everything. It's like, yeah, that from all the letters that people have found that when they're like, yeah, the dude stole or the valet or whatever stole the letters. And it's like, that's how we know about all this stuff. And because they got them all sold off. And
so was she doing something to not get pregnant? Because she could clearly have children. She had children
previous.
What happened to those kids?
I'm glad you break this up. Because
the kid in the beginning. Excuse me, sir. May I have my father's sword? And then you go there. Oh, he meets her. Oh, and we go on a date. You never see his stepson
again. Even worse,
again.
There's a lot of time spent with Napoleon and Josephine having sex. And by the way, it's skin
slapping.
Well,
one of them is.
It's skin slapping doggy style sex.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Ridley Scott also did in The Last Duel with the rapes of Jodie Comer's character. Very, very similar. Okay, and the goal there is to try to impregnate her and have a male heir who can take over for him. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they think, well, maybe he's not capable of having children because he hadn't had any yet. So somebody gets him another woman to have sex with, and she becomes pregnant with a boy heir who we never hear about again ever in the rest of the movie.
Right. It's like, I thought it's like, well, why didn't he just marry her if he's going to do a sham? Well, I guess she's not from any world. They do it to sow alliances or whatever. Yes. So he
but
can't
Josephine
just...
didn't have, did she have aristocracy in her lineage?
She was a noble. She was.
Oh, was she?
Oh, okay. She was in jail. Her husband was hung, but he was a French aristocrat.
Oh, I guess that's why she let him knock her up.
He was a French aristocrat. And he was...
The aristocrats.
Yeah. So he...
That's where the skin slapping comes in.
Yeah. And so
in Bob Saget's version.
So she was thrown in jail. He was hung and then...
hanged.
Was that?
It's actually how
it's
you
hanged.
Say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know why. It just sounds wrong, but...
It does sound weird, but hanged is hanged. Actually the proper thing to say there.
And so whenever they say, 20,000 whatever people were let out of jail, that was her. That's why her hair is short, because she was imprisoned and then out. But she
I just thought she was emo.
So she was at least a noble person and obviously loved her, so that was all good. She was the empress. But then when it comes to, well, let me pick a new empress or queen, it's like, well, we can do this to get the which nationality, but he was trying to, because he goes at first to the main guy. I don't remember all these guys, you know, what country they're from, but you know, he's like, how about your sister? And he's like, she's already taken. He's like,
what about the younger sister?
She's 15, you know that, right?
And he's like, but it's 1893, nobody cares,
right? And so
15 is an old maid.
Yeah,
right. So it's always about,
I mean, Elvis is gonna do it, and that's 60 years from now.
Well, there go the comments.
Good job, Tom. We're working on it. So, anyway.
160 years from now.
But I thought the war scenes were really good. I think Ridley Scott, I thought that it really looked like they filmed not on location, but practical sets for a lot of it. You know,
it didn't look like a bunch of CG mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. It looked like people were out there. Usually now it's all CG people, and if there was, they're really good. What you would see, crowds of people in formations, and a lot of the times it looked like they were using real people and choreographing it, if you will, and staging it all, and they were intense. Like, they kept my attention. I wasn't checking out like, I don't know. I think showing his strategy and how, I mean, the thing with the ice thing
was cool,
I think that shows him, like, again, love, take him or leave him, he was a brilliant tactician, and to show how he would trick these other forces and stage these attacks. It was really interesting. And to get them, lure them all on the ice, and they're slipping, and like, wait, what's under us? And shooting cannonballs and break them through the ice. Now, I looked up the history of that. Apparently, they found all horses and like one guy. So I guess the horses ran out there, and there was like one soldier in the ice because he wanted to drain the pond for some reason, like see how many people, and like that trick didn't really trap a lot of people, but sure, it's cinematic, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the battlefield scenes in this. I thought they were well done, but a little goes a long way. And by the time we get to the third or fourth battle that we see, it's like, okay, send in more guys with bayonets to fight hand-to-hand combat.
I just don't know what else, like, I don't know what, when I haven't seen a movie like this in a long time. I think of movies like, I'm not saying this is as big, but like Braveheart or the Patriot or whatever, any Mel Gibson movie, but when they're on the battlefield staging
the beaver,
yeah, that's very, yeah. He was at war with his demons, Tom.
Yeah, well, that's all of his movies.
Right. But I don't see a lot of movies that are, this is kind of a dad movie, right?
I was just thinking this movie is destined to be given to a father on Blu-ray for Father's Day and never open.
Yeah. But this is a dad movie, and I haven't seen one of these war type movies with the, you know, the outfits. I thought the costumes were really good. I thought the sets were really good when they were in their big lavish homes and the parties and the paintings and the gold, whatever. Like, I thought the set design was really good, and the war scenes were really good. And I don't know what else you come to a movie like this for, if not to watch these big elaborate war scenes, because I think the people watching this movie or the target audience are watching A&E and the History Channel and the formations, and they want to see it all.
I think it's like the difference between a good action movie and a mediocre action movie. It's like, if you don't care what's going on in between the action scenes, then the action scenes are just action
Yeah,
scenes.
I thought that Ridley Scott couldn't decide whether he was making a love story or a war movie.
Yeah.
And so he made them both, and it just, as Tom said, parts of it distract from the other part.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I could see. Yeah.
I would have rather seen more of the political machinations of what was going on, because I'm just like, I don't understand anything about how he's ruling. It's like,
you go to Star Wars for that.
All we ever see is him as a general. We never see him as an emperor.
But I think that was one of the things that, I know this is kind of like the Cliff's Notes version when you're watching something like this and packing a whole, his 30 years of rule or whatever into a, what is this, 2.5, 245?
Yeah. It was like 237, like, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're doing that, it's really hard to tell it. But the thing about Napoleon that endeared him to the people and his military was he would fight alongside them, which is really different, right? Because most of the time, the generals sit in the very back, and they command people and send their, you know, first wave out to die and all that, and they control all that. And he would fight alongside them. And that is what is why a lot of these forces, when you see things falling apart, and he's like, remember when I used to fight alongside you and you know, I miss ruling with you or whatever. And they were like, yeah, I remember that. I want that again. Like, they realized he cared about them and was risking putting his life on the line, not just sending them out to die. And so showing him doing all the war stuff, like, that was his deal, was he wasn't just in his office ruling the country. Yeah. You know, he had people for that. And his brother was one of them. Like, when he was gone at war, you know, other Napoleon was there running the country. And his thing was, you know, I'm going to go to war and fight alongside them. So I guess that was just a huge part of the way he ruled.
But it's not in the movie.
Well,
you get
the war
see,
stuff is.
You get to see him out there with his troops at or near the battlefield.
I didn't even know he had a brother.
Yeah, the guy, he's in the movie. He's the guy that pulled him out of the, when they almost kill him, that's his brother talking, because he was like the politician type. When he's like, you know, we're gonna be an emperor now instead of a five person whatever, and all the people are like, what happened
to
those?
That was his brother?
That was his brother.
I didn't know that either.
Well, because he says if my brother does anything to destroy France, I will kill him, when he has him at sword point and the troops go in and remember sword point, he goes, if my brother blah 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 blah, I will kill him. And then the troops run in and they surround all the politicians at gunpoint, and they're like, and then he goes, shall we vote? That's kind of a funny line.
Yeah, that was
at gunpoint. Right before that, he says, my brother.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I just thought he meant kind of like,
my brother
hey,
in
bro.
Arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I hate. And this movie does it, but all these movies do it. When they're giving the speech on the battlefield, and I'm like, dude, you just told me there's 125,000 people there. Three of them can hear you.
Yeah.
Like,
and by the way, some of the guys who are there, other generals who are shouting stuff, couldn't understand a word they were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, we had the amplification of their voices. Imagine you're two hills away.
Right. I'm like,
how did that guy get the message to go?
What'd he say? Who's hearing this rousing speech?
It's like telephone at the very end. The guy goes, he said, go get him.
Yeah.
Attack Russia? No, Prussia.
Australia? Well, that's going to be a hell of a walk.
I'm pretty sure he said Austria.
So basically his big downfall was that Napoleon...
Never start a land war in Asia.
In winter.
In winter. Well, they started in summer, and he underestimated how long it would take. So that was one his biggest mistake, really, as a tactician that I've surmised, is that he started in summer and was making his way to Russia because they would not join him. And they get there and they like deserted the town. He's like, where is everyone? And so they sleep that night, and then they wake up to the whole city ablaze. And so what they did was they they trapped them. They got them to march into Russia in the dead of winter, and then they all evacuated and burnt everything behind them. They killed their livestock. They burnt the cities. So they left all these this forces of 400,000 people with nothing to eat, nowhere to sleep, no shelter in the winter. And that's why 400,000 went down to, I think, 40,000 returned or something. It was like 10%.
All right, I do have a question about this. The Russians also had no place to sleep and nothing to eat.
Well, they must have.
Where do they go?
They're used to it.
They're going to get an Airbnb in
Poland? No. They retreated and they slept in the place. And then when Napoleon got to it, they burnt it and then went to the next place. Like, they strategically had places and then used them, burned them, like as they went.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like Sherman. I don't think they were like.
Okay.
I don't think they were like, you're going down with me. Like, they strategically made it so that the...
No, I know they burned A, and then they moved to B.
Right.
And then they burned B and moved to C.
Yeah.
But eventually, B and C have to have the capacity to feed and house you before you move out of A.
Yeah, well, they figured it out, I guess.
All I could think when the whole town, the whole Russian city, whatever city it was, I don't care, they all leave... Right, they completely abandoned this town, and I'm like, we couldn't even get fuckers to wear masks,
right?
Like, and they got the whole town, everybody out, okie dokie.
Well, yep. It's just a little different because when they say wear masks and you say no, they go okay. I mean, it's just a little bit different.
I'm not sure masks is the analogy there. Maybe a hurricane hitting Florida, everybody should leave. Would be a better analogy for you.
But whatever.
But you still have those people, I'm not leaving my land.
Yeah.
But there were repercussions. And I'm not saying that was better. But there's a reason why. It's like people have a little bit more freedom. That's why we're...
Repercussions?
Sorry. They were repercussions. No. So anyway, so that was his main downfall. I mean, I know we're bouncing all over. But yeah, the movie is just... It's his ascent from... When he was like in his 20s, he commanded... He was like... It wasn't like an army. He was a general or whatever ranking inside of like the public safety division or something. It really was. He was in charge of public.
He was in the safety patrol.
Yeah, Parks and Rec.
Yeah, it was like whatever he was and there's still military force around, but he was in charge of public safety, and he. I guess he made him safe, and he climbed the ranks, and England had taken over, and he staged that thing in the beginning where he went in and got their territory back and everything, and so he climbed the ranks and became a very decorated soldier, and so he just kept doing that, and with his tactician mind, he was able to come up with these ideas, and then eventually... Then when they were like, well, we need to change the way for France, we've got these five guys, like they left and started a burger place. I don't know if you know that, but the five guys that were in charge, but they elected these five people.
They invented the fromage burger.
Yeah, exactly. That were like making the decisions for France. And that's when they're like, yeah, this isn't like Napoleon and his brother and their friend. Again, I don't know who all the different people were, but the people that wanted power, they said, yeah, let's get them out and we'll rule the country. And so that's when it became a three-person board, and Napoleon was one of them. And then eventually, as Napoleon wins more wars and he's got people chirping in his ear, and his other advisor, friend, guy, whoever that was, is like, how about king? And, you know, and he's like, that's ridiculous. And he's like, and the next day he's like, now Napoleon, emperor of France, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he got these ideas where he would come into more power. He was winning wars. The people loved him, and they were very poor at this time. And they were coming out of, that's why you see in the beginning, it opens with Marie Antoinette being hanged because.
No, guillotine.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. Dang it. She lost her head.
Women.
I was trying to. I always say guillotine, and they pronounce it guillotine. A lot of people in the videos, historians say guillotine, and I don't know. It seems weird to me, but
I've always heard guillotine,
right?
So
because it sounds like how you're supposed to say it, if it's French or whatever. But no, I don't know. A lot of people say guillotine, and
I think the double L is a Y sound in Spanish, not in French.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean that sounds right, but. Anyway, so it opens with Marie Antoinette dying, and her husband, King Louis XVI, was I guess he was guillotined first, and then she was put in prison, and then the whole thing was that they were living this lavish lifestyle, as kings and queens generally do,
right?
And the people were poor, like poorer than poor, beyond poor. They couldn't afford bread, and that's why she supposedly said, "Let them eat cake," because she was so out of touch, which is apparently a hit piece, because she wasn't so stupid to think, you know, she knew that if they didn't have bread, they couldn't go and eat cake. But that's what someone said. Like, oh, can you believe she said that? Let's put her in jail.
Twitter.
So, right? it was not even X at that point, or Twitter. No. It was, I don't know what it was back then.
It was Gitter.
Gitter, pretty much. So at this point in time, the French people were very poor. They were paying, I think, up to 50% of their income in taxes. 50%, and the rich had tax loopholes, which, again, I mean, all this would have made for an interesting movie if they did less war stuff and more of the political
stuff.
Thank
God it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I mean, because really, if you look at it, it's like, wow, how interesting is this that the poor citizens are paying 50% in taxes and the rich are paying nothing because of loopholes? Like, that's how it was. So anyway, they got this is how revolutions start, right? And so she did enjoy her lavish parties and gold decorations and all that, as kings and queens do. And then the poor people say, we can't afford bread. So there was a revolution. And you know, King Louis's out. She's in jail. She eventually got guillotined. And then, you know, and that's what started with this new rulership. And then it went to three, then to Napoleon and all that. But the people loved him because he was bringing prosperity and money back in. And he was doing things for, and instituting, well, religion came into play. Like, you see, I guess he becomes emperor. The Catholic Church is the one that christened. I don't know how that usually works with being knighted.
Don't look
or becoming
at me.
King. Yeah, but
well, because the way the order was supposed to work is it goes like God, then king. So the church
is
overruled everything.
I see.
So like the Pope would,
gotcha.
You know,
so,
and that's why it was a big deal when like Henry VIII broke away from the Catholic Church.
See.
And created the Church of England.
Okay. Yeah. So he brought religion back in because he made, and this is, I know this is an interesting history lesson. None of this is in the movie, but I wanted to go learn about it because I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. Cool battles. He's a good general, but I don't know anything. So he brought Catholicism back and made it the religion, the official religion of France. And so that's how he got the Catholics on board and the church and everything. And so the people liked him. He was bringing money back in, brought religion in. And so he had a lot of people supporting him, the people, the church and all this. And that is how he kept in power and stayed in power and was better than the people that were not letting them eat bread.
But Kevin, I got to tell you, here's part of my problem with this movie.
Yes.
If you didn't know all the stuff that you went and learned,
right? Yeah,
there's no context for you in this movie, even though, and by the way, in my movie going experience, voiceovers, unless done by Morgan Freeman, tell you that you're doing a bad job of storytelling.
Right. It's almost always a cheat.
And it's almost always added in post-production because you showed it to somebody and they say, I don't know what's going on.
What is happening?
Get the guy in the booth and have him say, and then we went to whoever it was. Or in this case, I think Vanessa Kirby as Josephine tells some of the things that are going on.
I know. Some of the lines in this movie are, I don't know if you'd say exposition-y, but there's little drops of like... Yeah. It's kind of not as egregious at all. I'm still mad at that second new Spider-Man movie where they're in the bar and he's like, and you, Smith, you tricked them into doing whatever. Yeah. And you, it's like, dude, what? They did it. They did the plan. You don't need to tell them. So it's for us. But there were a couple lines in the movie where like, well, and you did blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that was ridiculous.
But if you need to add that or you assume that your audience knows the things that you learned by going on Wikipedia, then
I
think you failed as a movie maker.
I think this is an example of a filmmaker being too knowledgeable about the source and forgetting that his audience is not.
Well, I think of a recent movie, right? Five Nights at Freddy's made buku bucks, tons of money. If you don't play the games, if you don't know the games, if you don't like the games, the movie has nothing for you.
No value.
You can't go, this has cool kills, this has good comedy, this has whatever. Yeah. I mean, okay, some set design and some Henson Muppets. Like, okay, impressive. But for the most part, the movie has nothing for you. I think this is a movie for history buffs that want to see these wars staged in a cinematic fashion. I agree. That doesn't make your point invalid. I mean, you're right. The failure of this film is that I was interested enough in it that I went and did the research. But had I not, or had someone not gone in and known all this, you really take away, yeah, he's good at war stuff, but you don't know about his political ambitions or how things change or came to be. I mean, but on the other flip side, Five Nights at Freddy's is for the fans, and they turned up, and it made a ton of money. And I think this movie is for the history buffs. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because I don't like Five Nights at Freddy's for similar reasons, and this movie failed in that regard to me. But I think it, you know, the sets, the costumes, the war scenes, it was interesting enough and had my attention to where I still enjoyed the movie. And, you know, if it did a bad job, I would have been like, oh, that sucked, and not watch 2 hours of YouTube. But yeah. I saw it last night, and I watched a ton of these YouTube videos because I'm like, this is really interesting stuff. So I think the movie does a really good job at doing what it sets out to do, which is like, hey, history buffs, you know, all this stuff with Napoleon, and, you know, people, he gets a bad rap, but look at all the wars he won and how good he was at what he did. And
it also feels, though, that like part of the reason he was winning is because he had lots of people and resources. Like, he could just keep throwing bodies at it until he overwhelmed the competition. It's like not to disparage U.S. generals, but like, you have all the money and weapons in the world, so how clever do you really have to be? You know what I mean? You know, like, you're the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but also he formed those alliances. Like, if Napoleon didn't go and, you know, he went to Egypt and he went to all these places to gather their support and to make these connections and to get England out of there so that he could then partner up. And then he won that war on the ice against Austria. It was Austria and Prussia, right?
Wasn't Poland.
Was it Poland and
Austria and
Austria?
Poland.
Okay. So he beats Austria and Poland. And what he does, and they say it in the movie, is he says, you know, I didn't take my victory lap or whatever. You know, I can throw you all in jail and basically kill you all, you know, because we won the war. Like, instead of killing you on the battlefield, we imprison you, and that basically is you're dead. And so he says, how about we form an alliance? So his tactician mind was not just go kill everybody, whatever. It's like, hey, I won. You know, I beat you in this game of chess, and let's partner up now, and we'll both be on this side.
I believe it was Stratego.
Was this true? Yeah. Okay. So I think that just shows that
it was more of Risk, actually.
Yeah. I think that it's,
how did he get to Kamchatka?
I think that shows that Napoleon had a very strategic mind to where he wouldn't just kill people or be in a mad power trip and, well, you went against me, so you're dead now. He's like, I won, but I spared you. You know, I will come calling on you for a favor someday. And I don't know.
It's turned into The Godfather.
Yeah, that's just what I took from it.
I'm going to need a favor. And that day, it may never come.
Yeah. But in the meantime, a romantic interlude where I just go have sex with my wife.
Yes.
And
who could not be more disinterested.
Yeah. Correct.
Talk about not being able to read the room.
Because the movie you're talking about, Kevin, a history movie about a war and a genius at war, is not what this movie is.
Yeah.
This is a half of a movie about that.
It makes me wonder, right, when I hear the other part and then I see this movie, it makes me wonder if Napoleon was on the spectrum. Like, was he, like, for real? Like, was he, like, his, you know how a lot of people with autism, they have that one thing that they really dial in on that they're experts on? Like, oh, this kid can tell the difference between trains based just on the sounds, right? Like, I wonder if he was like that with war. And then,
like, for love, he was totally oblivious.
But, like, then he meets this girl, and he's never had a girl. That's what it sure seems like.
What historians say was that he was, from a very young age, he was on his own. His parents, whatever, died, weren't around. He has all these brothers. His parents had, like, 12 kids. I think 8 survived, you know. But for the times, you know, they had a very big family for medicine not being very good. And so at a young age, he goes to fight, and at 22, he becomes a general and all this stuff. And apparently, when it comes to love, like, that was the only time he wasn't in control. So he was kind of submissive, and he liked the fact that there was this woman that he could chase after and would kind of take care of him. And that's what they show you in those weird scenes. I mean, they seem kind of weird. You're like, this is this general guy, and he's coming home, and then they have this kind of kinky thing where she's like, you are nothing without me and all that. But that is what, then I watched these videos, and like, he liked that because it was the only place where he wasn't the emperor, you know?
Yeah.
And so
on the face of it, like, I know it's a simplistic take, but like, I don't know how else to read that other than the guy. Like, he gets thrown around so much, but the guy was a cuckold. Like, he dug it. Like, it was his jam.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he so much liked being cucked as he just wanted kind of a mommy, you know? He wanted someone to take care of him and not have to make all these decisions. He's running the country.
I kind of disagree.
Because he was not happy when those guys...
Like, I get that he's not happy, but that's also part of it, right? That's also part of...
Oh, like, let's fight now and have some rough sex and all that?
Yeah, because it's like, honestly, like, if he was that mortified... He would have either divorced her or killed her.
Right.
and moved on.
I can't believe that guy wasn't killed. The little boy blue.
Yeah.
You know, that guy, the guy they show that the only guy wearing a blue outfit, so you know it's the guy she was sleeping with.
Yeah.
Like, he only wears, like, is that, those are his house colors, I guess?
Yeah, so it's like, if he was that mortified by it.
Yeah, how did he not get that guy killed, right? Then, like, because he could have.
He could have done all those things, and nobody would have said a word. If anything, his standing would have risen with people back then, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't disagree. It was very weird.
And clearly, he doesn't mind people dying.
Yeah,
like, he's not opposed. He's not, you know, he's not opposed to that. So I don't know how to read that other than the dude liked it.
That's...
Now, all of that said, I do have to say the performer I like the most in this movie was Vanessa Kirby.
Okay.
As Jacqueline. Just, I think she gives a really, really good, nuanced performance. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like she knew how to manipulate this guy.
Yeah.
Who knew how to manipulate all these hundreds of thousands of men at war.
Yeah.
But he didn't know what he was doing when he was with her. I'm not just talking about in bed. I'm just talking about in little conversations between them. Well, he was obviously overwhelmed with love for her.
Well, yeah.
She was an aristocrat, and she came from this very high, you know, political family where she knows how to wheel and deal. And so, you know, when you see in the movie and he's like, why haven't we had an heir? We should, you know, be having sex 20 times a day or whatever. She's like, I'm busy. I'm out here, you know, taking care of the country and setting up things for the people and all that. So she was used to that. She was very smart and intelligent and capable. And so he was kind of out of his league when it came to a woman like that. And I don't think he knew how to deal with her.
He didn't know that love is a battlefield.
Yeah, exactly. So Vanessa Kirby was in Mission Impossible. She's the blonde one with the blue, really bright blue eyes or whatever. And then remember they change her eye color to brown on that train?
Yeah, the one that they meet towards the end.
Yeah,
the
she's in both the last movies. But
gotcha.
But
two,
yeah, but she changes her eye color or whatever. So she is lovely.
Yeah. Let me just go back to the sending a letter every day.
Sure. How do they get back and forth?
That's my question.
Yeah,
you're in Egypt.
I've never.
She's in France.
Yeah.
First of all, to fly that. I was just in Egypt not long ago.
Ooh,
it's like
fancy.
11 hours across the Atlantic just to get to Newark,
fly,
New
right.
Jersey. Now, France wasn't that far, but it's still hours to fly.
Yeah.
So a horse.
Jenkins, get in here. Take this letter to my beloved.
Now.
And make sure you get there in the next year.
But I think something that Ridley Scott did, which was really, really interesting, and it's not specifically in Egypt, but they do show this multiple times, and I thought this was fascinating. I think he's so historically accurate with things. The guy riding two horses. So you can give one horse a break and ride the other one and just ride next to you and then jump to the other. I've never in my life ever seen that in a movie.
No, either
and it makes perfect sense. You can't just ride one horse and what, okay, let's camp out for a day and whatever. No, they got to get a letter. They have to get intel. Someone's 5 miles away, 12 miles away. Nope, ride from horse to horse. I thought that was fascinating, and he showed it. No other movies show that.
I agree.
I'm not saying no other. Don't write me in with, well, do. Comment on YouTube. But you know what I mean? Someone's maybe done it. But I never have seen
it's
that.
It's not a frequent thing.
Yeah. So
I was just happy to see a horse not getting blown apart.
Right.
I thought we were going to see horse shrapnel.
I have seen movies where a rider rides to a certain point and there's another person with another horse waiting for them.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets off one and gets on the other and continues along the way.
That's a relay race at the end of camp, Paul.
No, that's
how they did the Pony Express.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, which only lasted for like 18 months. People think that's a thing that went on forever.
Yeah.
But it was a very brief period of time.
And how long did it take to get from St. Joe, Missouri to San Francisco?
18 months. They just did it the once.
Why hasn't she written back? Because it's been a year and a half.
I know. So him writing every
day. I read
a
fascinating book about this doesn't sound like it would be fascinating, about the history of the U.S. Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure. I've read those little placards on things at museums or whatever, and I'm like, this is fascinating.
And it was riveting, just like how it progressed and it was also fascinating to learn that apparently conservatives have always hated the post office. And I'm like, what do you got against the mail? And they would always conspire to try and make the post office ineffective and then complain about the fact that it was losing money.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the weirdest thing. And I mean, and this has gone on for legit hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's whatever the conservatives are in any particular point in time. And then they're like, it needs to make money. And then it's also kind of weird because people in rural areas tend to be more conservative, and they're the people who only get mail because of the big cities. Like, if you insisted on that the postal service be profitable, the first thing they would do would be to stop delivering mail to the people who are complaining about the lack of profitability.
Right. Privatizing the mail is a bad idea. And there's a concept called the last mile.
Yeah.
You know, UPS and FedEx quite often deliver your package to the post office,
right,
and they take it the last mile to your house, particularly in rural areas. You're exactly right.
Yeah. And at the beginning of the post office, sorry, taking us down a rabbit hole, at the beginning of the post office, it was actually illegal to have a private company deliver packages,
mm-hmm,
because that's where the profit was.
Yeah.
And so it was like, if you take that away from the post office, they can't afford to deliver letters. And they would deliver letters a lot of times, multiple times a day. Like, you would get like letter deliveries two or three times during the day.
Huh.
And they would, and then companies started coming in wanting to deliver letters themselves, and they had to make that illegal. That's part of why it's illegal to put anything in your mailbox.
Yeah,
because they were going.
It's left over from that. And so what would happen is these private companies would be like, well, it's really easy to deliver letters in Boston, but you know, the people that live, you know, 40 miles outside of Boston can just get effed.
Yep.
And so they
would. How about Alaska?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
so they would come in and they would want to deliver letters in the big cities where it was really easy and dense and cost effective, and then leave the unprofitable stuff to the government. So they had to pass all these laws to make that illegal.
Interesting postal fact: in the 18 months or whatever it was that the Pony Express was around, not one horse's head exploded. Not one.
That's American know-how.
Ridley Scott wasn't around back then.
Yeah. So anyway, Napoleon.
Yeah. So, I mean, he fights all the wars. He wins most of them. And then that really crappy thing happens with Russia where he loses 300,000 people or whatever. He comes back with 10% of his troops. And they're like, yeah, that's not really cool. So you're going to be abdicated. I don't know what the word is, but you're not emperor anymore. But he gets the golden parachute. He gets 2 million francs a year. He gets his own island of Elba, which is the part I knew because I'm watching all this stuff and
famous for the toast.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching all this stuff and I'm like, doesn't he end up? I'm like, I don't know much about Napoleon, but I know that he is banished to an island. But he ends up on Elba and he's there. Jacqueline?
Mm-hmm.
Josephine
ends up.
Well,
with,
Josephine was gone by then. It was Jacqueline.
Yeah, but I was like, it was. Josephine got a pretty good deal. They're like, she draws her annual 1 million francs. I'm like, dang, the former empress, whatever, gets a sweet retirement plan. She doesn't have to do anything.
Rich people.
I know, right? But seriously, and she's getting 1 million. Napoleon gets 2 million? Dang.
You know, Henry VIII's wives have to be like, what the holy hell?
Right? So he goes to the island, and he's bored as heck. He's got nothing to do there. He's like, this sucks. He gets like a tiny little, you know, army of people. What, he gets some guards and he gets an island, and it's like he's on Alcatraz. I mean, he's just looking out over the rocks. There's nothing there. And
I don't think knitting had been invented yet, so he had nothing to do.
Yeah. It's a very poor island. You see the people that live there just kind of, you know, it's just there's nothing for him to do there. He's this emperor stuck on this island. So he says, I miss France. And he's still writing Josephine and I miss you and all this stuff. Meanwhile, we see she's getting sick. She's been discovered. She has some kind of chest cold, whatever. And the doctor says, stay in bed. She looks very bad. And she's there with her daughter. So I guess that's the grown up. One of the kids
finally showed back up.
Yeah. That we've never seen. It's still the son, still the little guy with the sword. I don't know whatever happened to him. I think that's a very weird thing. I know that's hard in movies when you're focusing on all these characters and the war and the politics and all that, but don't even show us the kid then.
But I guess at this point, it's 20 years later. So if they showed us the kid, it would be a different actor.
Oh, sure.
And like, now you got to explain who he is. No, it's probably easier just like,
I get it, but it's just they showed the kid and he was a plot point of how they met. That's how he met Josephine.
Let's not do anything to slow this movie down. Like, let's.
Yeah. I just thought it was weird that. But if you didn't know the history of it, it's like she had two kids. And then when that daughter is by her side, I'm like, she had a daughter? And you know what I mean? Like, because they just glossed over this and didn't show you any of the kids, and all of a sudden there's an adult daughter. But anyway, so he gets off the boat, or he steals a fishing boat or whatever and says, if you don't mess with us, then you're good. So he commandeers that, gets back to France. Meanwhile, there's word of that, so the army comes to stop Napoleon, and then he has this rousing speech to all his soldiers that were his soldiers before he was excommunicated, and he says, you know, I miss you guys. I miss fighting alongside you. Let's make France great again.
Let's go find some new people to kill.
Yeah.
Good times. So
they all hooray and
who so has a horse?
so he gets his army again. He gets his army back, and like and he basically like it seems like he takes over France, because all of a sudden when they go to the next big battle with Waterloo, which is his downfall, he's like, we have 125,000 people. They have this, that. And I'm like, God, he went from the island and gathered 125,000 people. I mean, the people like Napoleon. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just whatever. He was bringing prosperity to France and people were happy with his rule because he was excommunicated. The fancy pants people tried to take over. They kicked him out. And then you see the big fat guys in charge then. And all the people that just do nothing, that sit around and eat and enjoy all the wealth and everything. And then, Napoleon comes back from the island and he can gather 125,000 troops. It's like,
he was an influencer.
Yeah. He was social media. He was an influencer. So anyway, he comes back, he gets this huge army, but, he just can't beat these guys. Alexander, was that Prussia or Russia?
I think that's Russia.
Okay. Alexander was supposed to team up with him, but he didn't. And then I feel like it was either him or Prussia then, the guy that comes back to his ex, whatever, Josephine, and says, remember he's like dancing with her?
That's the Russia guy.
Oh, it is Russia.
It's the Russia guy.
So that's Alexander. So then I'm like, dang, man, talk about being cucked. That guy was supposed to fight with Napoleon. He screwed him over, and then he gets excommunicated, and he's back macking on his ex-wife that he didn't want a divorce but had to because of the heir thing. Anyway, but so now Alexander and England are teaming up, and I believe – but then I thought they said Prussia was on the periphery, so I'm all confused.
Okay,
about
now here's the problem.
Yeah.
You did a lot of research on this, and you still don't know what the hell was going on in this movie.
Well, because I thought the Alexander guy that portrayed him, and if you're saying that's Russia, but I'm pretty sure, remember the guy that was riding out on his two horses, and he said, they're 15 miles out, they're 5 miles out? I thought that was Prussia, he said. We know he's fighting against England, and so either way, I think it's Prussia and England, but England has taken back over everything. And Napoleon's coming back to fight for France and the glory, and that's why everyone's following him, because France doesn't want to be ruled by England. That's where we were in the beginning, is England was coming in and trying to take over. And so his last attempt to try to keep France and not English ruled. And so he goes up against England. Their army's too big. They've got what I think is Prussia coming to flank them on the other side. And so, it's known, if you don't know much about history, Waterloo is the big battle he loses. So, but you see all these different things. The tactical squares that the formation England uses, that's a Napoleon thing. All these other countries studied Napoleon because he invented these things that are still used, taught in military academies today, like all these different strategic things that I don't know what they are, but apparently they're still that good. Then he invented these things, so England studied him.
Why do they still study those things? I mean, that's not how we would fight a war today.
I guess for ground assaults, or just the fact of like flanking or setting people here, and if you're at this border, and then I don't know what, but there's some tactical reason that must apply today. But they use it against him. So England now has more people. They're using his own things against him, so their tricks aren't really working that well. And he has to retreat. So Napoleon, he runs away, basically whatever, puts a sword up at the English guy, Wellington. I only remember that because his beef is pretty famous. But he points a sword, whatever. So he retreats. He is in England, and Wellington comes in and he's like, oh, I think I'm going to really like the English countryside. This is beautiful. I heard, it's nice this time of year. And Wellington's like, what the hell are you talking about? He's like, you're Napoleon. Like, we're not going to have you stage an uprising, because if Napoleon sticks around, what's going to happen? People are going to start going, hey, he's got some good ideas. They know he's an influencer, right? So he's like, no,
you're going to take away his Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, you're going to an island, and it's not that fancy Elba place that you, that wasn't that really that great. I mean, he puts him to a really crappy island. Mm-hmm. And he lives out the rest of his life. He's there for 5 years. Are those his kids? I don't know. I can't keep track. They never tell you whose kids.
Yeah, where
kids
those
are.
Kids come
I,
from.
I don't know. Are those just like some soldiers' kids that are playing? Are they his kids? The 15-year-old, the once 15, obviously years have passed. She's older. But that wife that to try to get an heir, which he does, that we never see again, like – what happened to her? We didn't see her one more time. Is she on the island with him? Was she at Elba? Did she stay at Elba? Does she have a retirement plan? I don't know.
Roth IRA.
Was that it? Okay. She cashed that in, and she didn't want to pay the taxes, so she fled.
Right.
So
I was really disappointed that they didn't give us any insight on Napoleon's penis, because it was supposedly cut off when he died.
Yeah. It's in New Jersey in a basement.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's in a jar. Wait, in New Jersey.
Was this in the movie?
No.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Because I thought maybe I blacked out in the movie because I know that I didn't see this.
You're like, hi. No, I thought we'd get...
Are you talking about his boner part?
Oh, nice.
I mean, I had to.
Who cut off his penis?
It's got its own Wikipedia entry. Yeah. Napoleon's penis was allegedly amputated during an autopsy shortly after his death in 1821. Since then, it has passed through several owners.
It's like the gag gift at Christmas.
Who included A.S.W. Rosenbach, whoever that is.
Did he create the keyboard?
But his name is clickable on Wikipedia, so it must be somewhat important.
That'd be great if he created the keyboard with the A.D.S.W.
He was an American collector, scholar, and dealer in rare books and manuscripts.
And penises.
And peni.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Peni. But
he was hung.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, he was hung.
Yes.
It was purchased by John K. Latimer in 1977.
Is that the urologist?
And let's see, mouse over his name.
I believe that's the urologist.
Was a urologist who did extensive research on the Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy assassinations.
Penile. Oh, sorry. Oh,
becoming the first medical...
for a second there, I thought, wow, I have really slept through history.
Yeah, becoming the first medical specialist... not affiliated with the United States government to examine the medical evidence related to Kennedy's assassination. So anyway, it is still held in his family, who keeps it as a private item in the nightstand.
private part.
It is a private part.
It was described as similar to a piece of leather or a shriveled eel. Yeah.
Apparently it's 1.5 inches in a jar.
Well, now.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you can't hold that against the guy.
I know, yeah, right?
I don't think that's indicative, intended.
Yeah. The guy's daughter has it in her basement in New Jersey. Oh, it's just a...
So, there you go.
I told you I did my research.
When she was a teenager, did she invite people? Hey, come on over.
If you had Napoleon's...
You have that in your basement? No, you don't.
Right?
Yes, I do.
And then at parties, she'd put it like in the middle of like the snacks and the dinner, you know, all the ice sculptures. It'd be a centerpiece of it. Yeah.
There's actually an entry here for characteristics. Would you like to hear the characteristics?
I just want to know at that party if anybody ordered hot dogs on, you know, the little
the
ones
little smokies.
On a bun.
Little smokies.
Yeah.
It says the preserved penis was described by Judith Pascal in the New York Times as, quote, barely recognizable as a human body part, and its authenticity is unclear. A documentary that aired on Channel 4, Dead Famous DNA, described it as very small and measured to be 1 inch.
Oh, see, it's shrunk since then.
It's not known what size it was during Napoleon's lifetime, but some sources say it was 1.5 inches.
Sorry. Okay.
So the item's current owner has allowed 10 people to see it, and it has never been recorded on camera. So there you go.
Sounding a lot more like a Ripley's Believe It or Not thing. You know how like all that stuff was fake, basically?
Yeah.
You
know? The thing that amazes me is there is a world in which if they put that up for auction, somebody would pay millions.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know. If that thing was in my basement right now, no, it would not be long before it was at Sotheby's or whatever. I mean, yeah. Why would you keep that around? That would get you a million even 500,000.
What are you going to do with it?
I know. Yeah, it's just, except for, unless that's
I want that in my basement.
Unless you're, that's your thing, right?
Feel like Indiana Jones, it deserves to be in a museum.
Yeah. But maybe, and then it's in a box in the basement, not in some giant warehouse.
Not a crate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's not even a shoebox.
No. Yeah. So, anyway. That's Napoleon. It's not like Ridley Scott can't make a movie. Yeah. Like, it's a good looking movie.
I just two misses it. In a row, though. I hated The Last Duel, and I did not like this.
I remember I ended up liking The Last Duel more than I thought I was going to. But
this is not one that I don't think I would watch this ever again.
No.
You know what I mean? But like, I enjoyed it again for the historical, the stuff I learned. I like that when it seemed very realistic, you know, it sounded like historically, it seemed like he got it historically accurate. I learned some things. It looked good. The costumes and everything. And, you know, and it made me want to learn more about it, but it's not one where I'd go, you know, Napoleon, this is a masterpiece. I'm going to watch this every year and whatever. I mean, I thought for, you know, a historical film that he did a lot of research on, it was good, but I wouldn't say, like, put this up for Best Picture. You know, it just kind of...
Remember when you were in school and there was a book you were supposed to write about, but you found out there was a two-hour movie about it, and you could watch that than you could... Yeah. If you did that with this, you would get an F on your paper.
Well, this does fall prey to the curse of most biopics, which is what I call and-then-itis. Like, there's no narrative. It's just, and then this happened, and then this happened.
And he tries to do too much. There's too many and thens.
Right. I think that's why they gave you the romance story, but you're right. It didn't focus on one or another enough to really, but, you know, he was trying to be like, let's put something in here besides war. I mean, let's not show 62 wars in a row. Yeah. Like, oh, Napoleon had this relationship.
I prefer when these sorts of historical movies focus on one particular moment in time, like Lincoln. Yeah. Instead of trying to tell you Lincoln's life in its entirety.
Yep.
Because lives don't have a narrative, right? And so it makes for a boring or just a forced story of and thens. And so if you have, like, let's just tell the part about the time he did this, you can construct an actual story, you know? One of the few biopics, I think, that kind of got away with that because there was a narrative was, oddly enough, Straight Outta Compton. Because their narrative was kind of like fighting against the record industry and the police being against them. And so I won't say forced narrative, but there was a narrative structure kind of over the entire arc of their career that most artists don't have. Like, as much as I love the Beatles, if you did a movie about the Beatles, like, I think it would be kind of boring. It would be the same thing. It would just be you sitting there waiting for them to play the songs you like.
Mm-hmm.
Like
right.
Queen. You know,
oh,
but
don't remind me.
But
about
if
that
you
one.
Think of good war movies, take Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
It's not even about all of World War II.
Right.
Let alone all of the decades before and after that. It doesn't. You know, it's not like, well, here's Captain Miller as a boy.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's
focus on the Ryan brothers when they were very, very young.
Right.
Right.
And then they grow up and, you know, had this tragedy during the war. No, it's about this specific thing.
Right.
And in Ridley Scott's case, he tried to do the entire thing.
Right. It's just too much. So.
What did you guys think about the mid-credits scene? Setting up
where they cut off his penis? Did I leave you early?
Yeah, you did. Well, that's the stinger at the very end is when the girl has it in a jar. And then it says, Napoleon will return?
So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Paul. You can find me on harrisonline.com.
This is Kevin. You can find me on harrisonline.com, working on the website.
Behind the scenes,
You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett, or subscribe to Circle of Wizards on your podcatcher of choice.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. And now, as we begin to wrap up, I realize I forgot to write a spoiler for this episode. So
have a good trip.
You're not going to get one. Oh. So we'll just go out.
I can put it in post.
With the generic, you've been warned.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoiler.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.